estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast episode. What is it? 468. I'm Adam and... Here's Debbie Melrose. Yes, Debbie Melrose, everyone.
Yay!
I don't just kill for money. It's also something I enjoy.
Kirby Butlet Sloan.
This is Agent Jerome P. Weissmuller speaking from Wales in England.
Mary Lang.
I shall ask my bees. They know everything that happens.
Beat that one, Ian Bissett.
Did I sound Welsh?
No, sounded Indian.
Well, let's start off with a song, shall we? When the red robin comes bop bop bopping along.
And Robert Haynes.
Good morning, campers. Heidi, hi.
Oh God.
Wrong show.
Did you like that one?
Wrong show, right atmosphere. Yes.
Hello there, campers.
So yes, Delta Wait, and the Bannerman is our.
Does he actually say Heidi?
Nearly
Ho
got the words out
the...
then.
No, he does. Sorry. Come on.
Now you shall ask babies.
Oh, it must be windy up where you are, Mary. I can hear those tornado warning signs, chimes going on.
It is. It's very breezy today.
Mm. Okay, before I, before I crack on, Lillian Robin says, here's to the future. Hello. Laurie Nick says, glad Hello. You found your doodah. Very fitting for this episode. Terry Miles, good evening, everybody. Good evening, Terry. Laurie Nick, Mary, you rocked that.
Oh, thank you, Laurie.
Oh, sarcastic emoji. Oh, no, that's right. She didn't put that, that was an exclamation mark. You know, they really do need to create a sarcastic emoji, to be fair. Okay, so this week we're going to be indulging in Delta and the Bannerman. And finally, yesterday, Andrew Cartmell was able to share some time with me and record some bits and pieces, some audio in regards to episodes of the Sylvester McCoy era. So he's backdating the one I'm just about to play because we did that last week. So, where's the...
We don't get to interact with him?
Aww. Pardon? What did you say?
We don't get to interact with him?
No, he's so pleased about that. Here's the Paradise Towers.
Adam is doing his best to protect him from us.
Yeah. Paradise Towers, here we go.
The first... story which I can really say that I worked on was Paradise Towers by the very talented Stephen Wyatt. I'm just going to put a quick plug in here that if anybody who's interested in Stephen's plays, and he's written a lot of fine plays for the radio and for television, I've always considered Paradise Towers by Stephen Wyatt to be the first legit story that I worked on, in the sense that I approved the writer, approved the scripts, and I worked on it from the beginning. So Paradise Towers was a very good experience compared to Time of the Rani. And Stephen Wyatt's a brilliant writer, and I just want to briefly put in a plug for him here. Stephen, as well as writing a lot of excellent plays and scripts for television, has written stage plays and some award-winning radio plays. And if anybody's interested in his looking at those scripts, they're now for the first time available for print on demand or downloads from a firm called Smith Scripts. So if you look up Smith Scripts and Stephen Wyatt, you'll be able to find some really fantastic writing. So Stephen came to me because he was actively looking for work. A lot of people came to me as soon as I became a script editor on Doctor Who. But the difference with Stephen was that he, even from the first script he submitted, I could see that he had a love of the grotesque and the bizarre and fantastical, which I thought would make for a very good Doctor Who writer. And when he came in for his first meeting, during that discussion, he actually mentioned the notion of doing a story in a high-rise building, because he had had a kind of weird experience in a, I don't want to say a slum tower block, but in an unprepossessing tower block. And that led us to discussion of Ballard's high-rise. And from that point on, we were really off to the races. That was a very painless birth, the script for Paradise Towers. Now, I remember it with great affection.
So there you go. That's what we're going to be expecting. A long, maybe slightly longer, sometimes slightly shorter. Maybe that reflects on his actual feelings on the episode, how long he talks about it for. But that's what Andrew thinks, or what his memories are, of Paradise Towers. Anybody want to remark on that, or shall we move on to Belter and
there's
the Damned?
There's actually stuff there that was new to me.
New to you? Who was nude? Who didn't have any clothes on? Hang on. What are you on?
Well, did you not read his script, Doctor?
Yes, I have read the script, Doctor.
Everything you said he pretty much said now.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that in a lot of his commentaries, he's basically just quoting from the script, Doctor. But in this case, there was a couple of things in there that I don't remember from script, Doctor.
Well, so I'll send a message of complaint to him after the show.
No, I like him. No complaints.
Right.
But,
okay.
But it is interesting though that he tends to quote from script Doctor a lot.
Okay, well, we'll find out. Not.
It's almost a daily diary of everything that he did. And everything
My biggest problem with script Doctor is that he has things constructed in paragraphs that aren't really paragraphs.
So what do you think of that then, Andrew?
That's a serious offense.
Like the paragraph will have two subjects instead of one subject, and they'll be completely disconnected.
Okay,
well, I understand. It's because it's from a diary, so fine.
There you go.
And I'd like some retrospective stuff as well. To tell you the truth.
Let's see. I'm currently in. I try to remember which story. I'm continuing to read it, obviously. But in most cases, he does not have a summary of the story. But in whatever chapter I'm currently reading, unfortunately, the book's upstairs in the bathroom.
Now we know where you like to read.
Yeah.
But it's written the way a script supervisor is. Because while he's writing about things happening for Delta and the Bannerman, he's also writing about Dragonfire.
Yeah.
Because
on
that as well, so mixing up stories.
I'm not saying that's a problem. I'm just saying that most of the time he doesn't give a summary of the story, but in whatever story it was I'm in right now, I'm not gonna go up and grab it. He actually has a 4-paragraph summary of the story, which I appreciated but was unusual.
At least we don't have to do a review of script Doctor now, do we? That's a good thing, isn't it?
And I like script Doctor. Don't get me wrong. It's very good.
Good. Can I get on now? Good.
Oh, wait.
Okay, right. So Delta and the Bannerman begins with the worst Doctor Who title sequence that we've had, and theme music for that matter.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it.
I don't like it.
I love it.
I don't like it. It is very iconic of obviously the era. Don't like it. Pardon, Robert?
Yeah, but have you ever seen a run, somebody's joined all the titles together?
Yeah, I did
that.
And
that's the one that really stands out as being not...
Very good. Apart from, obviously, the last, the Trial of a Time Lord one, I will say is slightly worse than this, to be fair, but there you go. Okay, so there's a quick scene of a load of people carrying banners and sort of
Batman.
Star Wars-esque... style uniforms, and
yes, including Admiral Tag directly from the Death Star.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, God.
But the scene that I'm trying to talk about is they're perched on the top of a cliff, which I presume is a quarry, but it does rather look a little bit like the White Cliffs of Dover, and behind them is the Death Star. Oh no!
There's a very nice moon behind them. Yes, I love that shot.
Yeah, it's very cleverly done. Yeah. And rather sort of cleverly named Bannermen, obviously. And there's a battle going on. And there's lots of green bog-eyed monsters that are dead on this battlefield.
Or
did you see some of the explosions?
What did you tell you what they actually look like, Kirby, before you interrupt me? They look like the soldiers from Toy Story.
I was about to say that while I was watching with Fred, that's the first thing she said. Are those green army men?
Yeah, they do look that way.
Laurie Nix posts a GIF of something or other, which I'm not going to play. It says first day of. Oh, I can't see what it says. I'll have to play it, don't I? First day. Let's play this GIF. Oh, first day of fall. Well, thanks for that. I really wanted to forget that we were heading into autumn because you got the word wrong. It's autumn. Laurie. And then she says, sleeping in front of my cup of tea, see above. Terry Miles, where's the kettle? And Robert Bench Jr. says, hello, everyone. Happy Saturday, Sunday. But nobody mentions that it's autumn.
I said it's Monday to Robert.
Autumn. It's nothing's fallen off the Monday, trees yet. It's autumn.
And it's spring. Thank you very much.
Oh, yes. Sorry, Robert. I'm being locationist there, aren't I?
Yes.
Guys never call
very
it.
Very offensive.
No, I occasionally call it the fall. I don't know, but it is autumn. Autumn's a prettier word than fall. Fall makes things show just accident prone. Autumn is a season, isn't it? Okay, so talking of fall, there's quite a lot of very dramatic falls down this sort of cliff, which are quite impressive.
That was a good stunt, Matt.
Yeah. And then, of course, we'll see the iconic, what's his name again? Gavrok, is it?
Yeah.
Was it Davros, or is it?
Not Davros, Gavrok.
Gavrok. Oh, it's not Gavrok. Not Davros and Gavrok.
They get them mixed up.
who's sound source horn, and they're after a cute little lady in a white, doesn't stand out at all in a white sort of clothes that grow with her. Or grow with whoever's
wearing
them.
How come she's different colour from the other ones?
Because she's some royalty.
Yeah. Robert,
I think it's that thing, Robert, that
okay.
The female of the species looks a bit different to the male of the species, which happens
she's
in...
She's the bloody queen, mate.
She's a bloody queen, mate.
Separately. Yeah.
She's the bloody queen.
Yeah. Also... It's also, a science fiction fantasy TV program.
Yeah, I knew Kirby was going to say that.
Oh, and can I also add that the Bannermen are all wearing the train helmets from Mysterious Planet and also Earthshock.
Thank you. Did you get that one, Kirby?
Yeah. Well, I knew he would, so I got in there first.
Well done. You've upset him now.
In there sometimes.
Yeah. Terry Marcells,
well,
where's
that
cat?
Oh,
nearly got it out. Sorry, Terry.
Master?
Yes.
The spaceship happens to show up again as the Nosferatu in Dragonfire.
Oh, God.
So there.
Right.
Well, if you notice the hexagonal pattern on her outfit, yeah. And later on when she wears the outfit again, it's like, you know, the beehive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we had bees.
Ding, ding,
yeah,
ding,
but we
ding.
Had bees in
little,
the,
little,
yeah, excuse me,
on,
Time of the Rani. What?
She
needs
ding.
A ding.
Oh, what, for Mary?
Yeah.
No, because that's a quiz reference. We're not allowed to reference
yeah,
the quiz. Anyway, right then. One of these Toy Story soldiers gets into the ship with Delta, but hiding on the ship is that bloke from Star Wars, who then savagely murders the soldier bloke, and he's just about to very, very slowly shoot Delta, which is what his main aim of the whole story is. But he gets shot.
Slowly shoot Delta.
Injured slightly by dying Toy Story soldier who hasn't got a mouth.
Is that the same actor? Is that Gavrok? I thought
yes,
it was a different
actor. Yes, Gavrok.
Okay,
yeah, Gavrok.
I'll look. Yeah. Oh, it is.
Because he gets
blown
out. He gets blown
right.
out, remember?
He's just not injured.
He just, yeah. gets a nick, shall we say.
It's a
anyway,
flesh
so,
wound.
Yeah, yes. Flesh wound, yes. Sorry, I was actually going to say what people were saying. So, yes, Terry Miles, where's the cat? Oh, we've done that one. Robert Bench Jr., hello. I've done that one. Laurie Nick says, the Queen Bee, and then Devo wants their specs back. Or Devo.
Devo.
Devo, sorry.
Devo, yeah.
Goodness me.
Then... the TARDIS materialises in an area, conveniently has a target, great landing by the Doctor. It's obviously right in the middle of this sort of circular thing.
Master.
What?
Have you seen the extra scene, which is on the DVD, set in the TARDIS, that where the Doctor has some spare money and underneath the TARDIS console?
No. Well, I might have done in the past, but I didn't watch on this occasion.
Yeah, because you mentioned it 10 years ago. But
I may have done, but I didn't watch on BritBox 10 years ago. I just watched on BritBox.
10 years ago?
Yeah, when in episode 18 or something.
Mentioned this. Anyway, right then. So the TARDIS lands, and there's a great big sign, which I would have put in a quiz, G715. That would have been a question if we'd been allowed to do a quiz.
I have no attention to that whatsoever.
I don't pay any attention to quiz stuff anymore.
Do you not? That's an interesting one. Anyway. Right, okay, so the Doctor...
I just pay attention to silly things that I can bring up.
So the...
Like that joke every week?
So we
there's been an uptick in him bringing up insignificant things.
Yes, there has.
So for a split second, I thought the Doctor regenerated into a question mark umbrella, because that's the first thing that comes out of the TARDIS. But it is followed by
Master.
The Doctor. What?
This is the first. This is the first time we see the question mark umbrella.
I know.
You should have said it.
Yet you still. Thank you, Captain Obvious. You still landed us with this.
Yes, thank you, Captain Obvious.
Captain Obvious. Well, I think my head too many times. I've got a headache.
If you hadn't said anything, it might have waited a few minutes.
I hope Kirby describes all the extra scenes, says Laurie. Well. Don't say stuff like that, Laurie, please. Robert Vince Jr., I like full pumpkin pie, apple cider, and changing of the leaves. Yeah. There we go. I got it out for you there, Robert. Yes?
May I say something about the first time I saw this?
Why do you ask? You normally do it anyway. I'm going to lean back. See if my chair still works.
I was so excited watching this the first time, because this is the first Seventh Doctor story I ever saw. Mm. I didn't know anything about it. And when the And, you know, I am a big Disney themes park fan.
Are you? Well, there you go.
And I was so excited that the Doctor won a trip to Disneyland. I was disappointed that they didn't.
Did you really think they had the budget?
That was a bit briefer than the normal.
Because 1959 is when they built the submarine voyage and the monorail and the Matterhorn.
Oh, dear Lord.
Anyway, so we're 2 minutes 40 seconds into the episode, and how far are we? We're about 20 minutes into the podcast. Back. Doing really well this week, Kirby. It's like a 10% success rate in slowing the show up. Oh, we're back. We're back. Okay, so the Doctor and Mel come out of the TARDIS. I'm waiting for an interruption. Mel wearing slightly sort of for her, so not as loud a costume. And they bump into Ken Dodd. Now, this is stunt casting. Pardon?
Greatest death scene in the history of death scenes.
Yes. Think, right? At the time, I seem to remember this stunt casting upset a few people. But Ken Dodd is a legend. He was Sir Ken Dodd when he passed away. And we are very lucky that we have, in our history, this legendary comic performer and chap from Liverpool. In Doctor
I hate
Who.
To so, say this, but I've only seen him in this.
No, it's a bit silly, but it's a moment.
It's okay.
It's only a little bit silly, but it's not no sillier than some of the stuff we had on Doctor Who over the years. And I think he's really, really good. I love seeing him in this episode. Yeah. It's quite.
Can you recommend something else that he's been in that I could watch?
The Royal Variety Performance. There you go, Kirby. Can I get on with the blimmin' Doctor Who that we're
just
trying to talk about?
Look on YouTube, Kirby. Just type his name in.
Yeah, he's
on.
Yeah, loads of stuff. Normally, his singing and his comedy performances. And he was almost a comic genius, because like Bob Monkhouse, he was able to tell jokes off the cuff, you know. He's able to
wasn't his teeth insured for like $1 million or
something like that. Yeah. So this chap, they've won the 10 billionth, they're the 10 billionth customer or something like that, and they've won a holiday.
How convenient. Starts the story.
Yeah. And but Delta,
imagine if they hadn't won that, there'd be no story.
All right, but Delta's sort of managed to get
us would still go off, of course, though.
Get there as well, because Mel travels to the holiday destination via the very cool coach, which I absolutely love. Because when I was a kid, I used to imagine that sort of inanimate and animate objects were spaceships, including the car and buses. When I was sat in buses, trying not to feel sick because of the motion sickness, and our house, in fact, was a spaceship, and we used to have all these. I used to
of course,
draw these adventures where we
were
having sort of space adventures with the Enterprise. And I used to drink. We were very, very good at drawing the Enterprise.
And that was when he was 18.
What?
You completely skipped the first scene with Weissmuller and
excuse
Hoff.
Me, I haven't got to that bit yet.
Yes.
And you also missed the aliens turning into a human. I love that bit.
You shift all the way to them getting on the bus and Delta getting on the bus when all that stuff occurs way before that.
All above seen so far is Ken Dodd coming out and congratulating them for being a 10 billionth customer. Then I was just about to move on to the Americans and the Morris
Mel
Minor.
Get on the bus, though.
No, you said Mel gets on the. And
no,
Mel
I was just paraphrasing the about bus. The future because just let me talk. You
Here's
get to
the
talk
future.
A lot. Anyway, the Americans stop at a police box and Weissmuller tries. Why is he wearing that outfit though? He tries to.
He's a stereotypical American.
Oh, okay, that's fine. It basically, they're hunting this satellite.
That's the logo of the American baseball team, the New York Yankees.
And then, of course,
you don't know this, but since I'm a stereotypical American, I am always wearing that outfit. Not.
Well, you're not very stereotypical American. Is he a stereotypical American, Mary?
No.
really, but I think they chose that symbol on it because I think the New York Yankees are kind of known everywhere.
Oh, you mean like the Chicago Bulls?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jordan.
Right. Anyway, so all these, like you were trying to say, the passengers and the driver of the coach get sort of transformed into humans.
I love
very,
that bit there.
Very, very amusingly so. Mel goes on the bus.
Well.
Pardon? It is done well. Mel
it's
goes on the bus
well.
With them, and the doctor decides.
They built one costume for one scene.
To go via TARDIS. Meanwhile, Gavrok sort of knows that Delta's around there somewhere. She's got onto the coach as well. And so Weissmuller and his friend just have a night of camping while they're sort of trying to tune into the radio signals that this satellite is giving out. And the coach is attacked by Gavrok and crash lands. With the help of the doctor and his umbrella and his leg and a few other bits and pieces, crash lands just where it needs to crash land by Shangri-La Holiday Camp.
Butlins.
No, it's not actually. It's supposed to be Disney, isn't it? But it's good enough for the.
They hit this, they're thrown off course.
Yeah, so they land at a holiday camp, which is quite convenient considering they were supposed to be going somewhere on holiday anyway.
But the whole concept of holiday park or holiday camp, those don't really exist in the States, so it's a uniquely British thing, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Debbie, tell us.
No, I don't want to. I have nothing but bad memories of them.
I want to hear those bad memories because it's
they look exactly like they do in this, and the food was always shoddy, the entertainments was always laughable, and probably the highlights were donkey races.
Okay, well, I went
to... The whole thing just is so bizarre to me.
I actually did the podcast from a place like this many years ago, but no one wants to listen to my bloody experiences, do they?
Please, tell us.
I didn't enjoy it. It was really weird. It was run down. You know, you had a toilet block and shower block. And they're uniquely British, but also terrible.
Right, I want to say, this is set in 1959, right? I think... they were trying to make it look like the Heidi High Camp, which is set around the same era. Now, what I went to was the Pontins in Southport, which is a bit grotty. Mm-hmm. It was a bit grotty. When we arrived, Deb was unhappy with the fact there was some mould in the shower, so we moved to another one which didn't have mould in the shower, but it did in fact have mould in the kitchen anyway. So we didn't move any other ones. And then they had an entertainment block, and you'd go in and they'll do discos and
dancing.
But
you Brits still have holiday camps, don't you?
Yeah, but they're slightly more upmarket than the Pontins style. Butlins is the more upmarket and sort of better kept style that this is sort of set based on.
This is in the early 80s. Holiday camps were very much like this one.
Yeah,
from Delta, they were exactly the same.
There was one in Ride that closed down a few years ago, and there's some very interesting video of this sort of. And that camp was used. Was it the one that was used in the film That'll Be the Day with David Essex and Ringo Starr? think it was.
Never seen that.
So yeah.
You haven't seen that? It's a good movie.
Well, that'll be the day.
And Stardust.
Well, Stardust.
Apparently, there's an upscale Butlins in the town that Alan T. Butcher lives in.
Oh, Butlins, yeah, that's a really one of the best Butlins. Is.
About but the
nowadays, it's
Is there a decent fish and chip shop around him?
There is. If you go to Thornest Bay, which is a caravan park, there's a fish and chip shop there.
Now before Ian brings it up.
What?
I did not make the noise. It was someone else made the noise.
I know.
This particular Butlins had just closed as a Butlins while they were filming.
Is that why the grass needed mowing?
Yes, that's why the grass
needed mowing anyway.
Mm. Well, apparently there were still guests in some of the parts, and a couple of months later, it was bought by some other company, which still ran it as a holiday camp for another 10 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, they could have actually made some point of fact that it was a Doctor Who filming location right then.
Robert, we're trying to say
what our listeners are saying, viewers, but somebody won't let them say anything. Oh, right. Robert Vince Jr. says, I like fall pumpkin pie. Don't you mean autumn? Apple cider, changing of the leaves. And then Terry says, the headache was caused by Kirby. My head. Yeah, I was patching it. Laurie Nick says, reverse psychology might work on him. Ian Bissett, what's he doing on there? Oh, no, it won't. Oh, no, it won't. Tim Drury.
Yes, it will.
Yes, it will.
Hang on, Tim's on. Yeah, Tim's there. Sorry I didn't comment last weekend. Was in an Edinburgh hotel room with rubbish internet. Was it anything like Shangri-La? Laurie Nick says, you have to consider that the CIA sent their best to Wales on a snipe hunt. Terry Miles, the coach was hit by a satellite, not the bannermen. Oh, sorry. Oh, yes, of course it was, because they were chasing the satellite. Thanks for that.
Satellite.
I put that in there to see if anybody's paying attention, Terry. Check out the pontins at Puckpool. No, I don't think there is one at Puckpool, is there? Well, they might have been in the past. There was one. There is actually an overgrown holiday camp near Puckpool, which is quite spooky. It's sort of like quite eerie, because all the huts and stuff are all there, but there's just overgrown and wood and everything. There is a video available of that on there's a video of that on YouTube. I can't remember what the place was called, so if somebody can remember what it was actually called, just Google that. Some really interesting videos of, and there's also some videos of the film that people, cine film that people have posted while they were there holidaying, and then they mix it with footage of what it looked like a few years ago when they in there. Yes, it was a camp. Was the camp, sorry, says Terry. Laurie Nix, David Essex, meow. Is there a cat in here?
Yeah.
Robert Vench Jr., I wish I enjoyed the story more. I like the time travel element. And then Terry says, that's the one. Right, we're nearly at a position to get back to reviewing the episode. Sorry, Kirby, did I interrupt you? Kirby?
Wait.
Kirby.
Sorry, did I interrupt you?
No.
Oh, I'll carry on. Right then, so they've arrived. This is only episode one, everybody. They've arrived, they've very quickly welcomed by that chap that used to be in On the Buses. No, it wasn't On the Buses, was it? Oh, he was in Fawlty Towers, wasn't he? With the sensitive wife. He's been in loads of stuff, hasn't he? His name? What was his name in this? Major...
I forgot. Hello,
and for some reason...
Wait.
Lillian says you skipped my comment. You did. Her comment was, Robert is looking forward to spring, not autumn.
It's spring already. Sorry about that, Lillian. I'm getting it from all angles at the
spring
moment.
Spring break!
That's what she said.
So, yeah, they're all sort of... they arrive and they're welcomed into the camp. I don't know if they realise that nobody's paid or anything like that, but they're welcomed into the camp and they meet Billy, who's got his sort of... his overalls on, because he's a mechanic, I presume, and he likes his motorbikes. And then Mel is...
Well, don't you pay in advance?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because there, one of my quotes, if I hadn't been able to get mine in, the one that I did, was, now you're telling me that you are not Happy Hearts Holiday Club from Bolton, but instead are spacemen in fear of an attack from some other spacemen?
Mm. Yeah.
I like that.
I just want to know what happened to the Happy Hearts Holiday Club.
Yes.
I mean, we never found out what happened.
No, we didn't, but I suppose
nobody
cares.
No, that was a whole different group. That was
a whole different group. Okay.
Maybe they ended up going to Disneyland.
Maybe.
I didn't actually apologise to Lillian for skipping her comment. Robert Vance Jr. has an alien with a balloon, which says yay on it. And then Terry Marr said he was a teacher in Please Sir. Yes, he was, the Welsh chap, yes. Right, well, thank God. Right, and now,
may I say that we've spent over half an hour talking about a 23-minute episode.
Yeah, thank you, Mary, for pointing that out. I'm trying my best here, you know.
I'm sorry, Mary, I totally concur.
That actor also took out his false tooth so to make him look...
I said to Tom, I bet you we're going to end up talking longer about this than about any of the better series. Yeah.
I am trying.
You're so right.
So, Mel...
How did you ever get through the Daleks' master plan?
Yes, he was. He was in Faulty Towers, you're correct. Yes. So now we can move on, because we've found that information out and we can push forward.
Please.
What I don't understand, though, in this whole story is how accepting everybody is of what's happening around
them. I know.
well, it was the 50s.
Which people?
It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
People are so normal, then.
I've got a comic
as evidenced
here,
by the CIA men that look like a comedy double act.
Yeah.
What I was trying to say, and I've been trying to say for the last half an hour... is that Mel has now been found herself in a room with Delta. Right, now you can talk about some other stuff that's unrelated to that for another 10 minutes while I get my fez.
I wish you had said that earlier. I mean, like half an hour ago, that would have been handy.
I was stopping him, guys. It's not like tonight, but there you go.
It's not like he was being interrupted all the time.
Oh, master.
And as a perfect example.
Yes.
Master.
Yes.
He just looks really slow.
You know the dog that's being led around all the time?
The what?
That's J&T's dog.
What dog? I don't remember
there being a dog in it.
He's always being dragged.
Can we skip to episode 3 and us just talking about what we think of it?
Yeah.
No.
What do you mean no? I can't even get through this episode.
Because Kirby won't let us.
Kirby won't
He's
let us.
He's got too many fascinating facts to get.
It's one of my favorite stories.
Oh, I know it is. No, one of mine, or at least it was.
Kirby, so you can go to town.
Right, let's see if I can get through another sentence. Right, then where are we up to? So Mel is making friends with Delta, and the Doctor prizes the satellite off the front of the coach. And, of course, the coach runs off some dilithium crystals, which needs a bit of recharging. The Doctor has something on the TARDIS that can regenerate the crystal, and so he sets about doing that. Meanwhile, Ray turns up in her scooter, and bless her, she's the worst actor in the whole of the series.
I'm glad she didn't end up as a companion.
But I do like her, but she is the worst actor in the whole story.
You know, for a long time, I thought she was really Welsh, and she isn't.
No, well, that explains a bit then, doesn't it? Robert Vance Jr. says, Fez... Well,
she's not really Welsh. The accent is terrible, boy.
Yeah, a bit like Mary. Oh, no, sorry. It was sorry, Mary's was better. Sorry, Mary. No.
Oh, I thought that was French. Sorry, Mary.
Yeah, fezzes are cool, as the Doctor said. Mary. That's what Robert says. Right, where do we go? So Ray comes in. She fancies Billy. Just like to point out, she's got a thing for Billy. But Billy likes the older, slightly alien type of lady that wears weird sort of white.
Billy's a tramp.
Yeah.
He just sees the next one come along and off he goes. It's just awful.
What I did forget to mention that...
he likes insects.
What?
He likes insects.
Anyway, I did forget to mention that Delta has a little box with something in it. And this thing is like a silver ball-y thing, which then after they kill... Sorry, Gavrok. Is it Gavrok or Davros?
It's Gavrok.
Gavrok.
Could I point out, since it is a silver ball, it eventually does ball?
What?
Huh? It cries.
Anyway, they kill poor old Ken Dodd. Don't they realise he's a Knight of the Realm? Or he wasn't at this stage, but he would be. And the Doctor does some... makes some friends in the food hall. I love the way he gets the apple from the little boy and then listens to it. I think that was so Doctorish.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Matt Smith picked up on that when he was characterising the Doctor.
Probably. Sadly, and Andrew mentions it.
Yeah. Sadly, as the camera passes across, a couple of the extras look into the camera while a lady is carrying some sandwich or some dinners around. That's very, very well set up. The whole background and the authenticity of the food hall and that was very small.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason it looks authentic.
Why?
Because it's in a real holiday camp.
No, just the way they've set it up. I just like the way I think it was a bit pokey and small.
Yeah, and it looks like it's an ongoing holiday camp. I mean, the office looked like an office. The Heidi High office doesn't look like an office.
Yeah.
You know, the studio stuff in Heidi High didn't really look quite right. It was perfect where they did it.
See outside,
And they filled it in nicely with all the stuff going on in the background. Anyway,
added to the
ambiance. There's a lot of nice period details, though, isn't there, I thought.
I just said he could continue. That was really...
the only studio stuff is the interior of the spaceship and the TARDIS.
Yeah.
I'm
having a nap.
And maybe the laundry. I don't know.
No, the laundry was really the laundry, and they said that it really stank.
Well, yeah, after the doctor and Ray had slept in there the whole night.
I was about to say, they didn't have bathroom facilities in there.
No, and I mean, it was quite a shock that knocked him out. Who knows?
So Billy takes the shine to Delta. He falls immediately in love with her. Because it has to be immediate, otherwise it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. He's immediately in love with her, and then the next scene is the shindig they had in the evening with the live bands and the loudspeaker that Billy's very proud that he managed to bodge together. What?
Come on, Kirby, I know you want to say it.
No.
Come on, Kirby.
Hey.
You were going to say something about the person that does the incidental music, weren't you?
What, no. Kev McCulloch's in the band? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Why couldn't you just come out and say that? I knew that, but I've got to be quiet sometimes.
I was waiting for Greg to come out with it.
Oh, my gosh.
Your comic timing is getting better.
Later, Adam.
Right. Kirby.
You have to go back to this timestamp and grab that.
Yes, I do. Kirby.
Master.
Shh. Very careful. Shh. Because that was funny. Right then, so yeah, the doctor goes skulking around and gets cuddled by Ray in the store cupboard, and then the bloke from the flying pickets turns up and threatens to kill them in a very sinister way because he's on the phone to Gavrok, and the doctor does the most ridiculous sneeze he could easily have stifled, so as we could have the end of the episode.
Well, I got to say one thing about this in the story, as far as general Doctor Who goes, it was actually kind of amazing for this just bit part character that they gave, I don't know, some legend to the Doctor in that bit.
Mm.
He's like, oh, now I got a twofer because you're the Doctor. Everybody knows about, it's like, so I think that's one of the times where you hear people talking about the Doctor in a generalized kind of way in the universe,
Yeah,
that's rather than like, oh. Kind of stuff. Yeah, it's just like.
Robert Venturi Jr. says, Mel decided not to scream too much and let the little girl do it. And then Lauren Nick says, Kirby just faked us out. and then Lillian says, is anyone going to mention the blue suede shoes worn by the bounty hunter? Oh, yeah. Well, we've got to mention that in the next episode.
Oh, God.
If we ever get to the next episode, we'll mention it then.
We can't now. She's beaten me.
Then Mel does the most pointless scream at something that's better at. It's quite good. I think it's quite good, but I'd more likely laugh at it and go, oh, than go, ee! Of course.
I hate her pajamas, too.
Dear, I'm sure she's absolutely terribly offended by her 80s pajamas. So the Doctor's going to get killed. Doctor and Ray are going to get killed. Doctor tries to save the girl. But like I say, Gavrok decides he's had enough of the bloke from the flying pickets and sends back a feedback loop to blow him up and just leave his blue suede shoes.
That was funny, though.
Very good. But it knocks out Ray and the Doctor, who have a snooze together.
Yeah. Like the next morning when they stumble out of there, I'm like,
I think you need a bit of a tic-tac, Doctor, in a Welsh accent. Anyway, so in the dead of night, Billy stalks Delta with a load of flowers, she's nicked off a grave, and walks into the room, and she's cuddling a little green puppet. But he doesn't run away. You think, oh, I quite like green puppets. And the next scene is we meet the beekeeper, who is suspiciously Time Lord-ish.
As far as I'm concerned, he is a Time Lord.
Okay, well, he must be a Time Lord then. And he's doing some beekeeping, and the Americans show up asking questions. And
are you sure they're Americans? I mean, have they got anything that would, like, isn't it? I don't know.
One's definitely American.
Like, I don't know. How can we tell just at a glance that these guys are Americans?
One of them might break out in a song.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
He also might manufacture gags.
Yes. Hey. Let's not bring up your patty cake collection, all right?
Lillian says, it's lucky Delta is the same size as Mel to borrow her dress. And then Laurie says, he was ionized. And Robert Bench Jr. says, going to get lunch listening through my car radio. Well, don't run over any squirrels or squirrels or anything like that. Anyway, the baby, fortunately, is turned from a puppet into a baby, wearing a green version of the...
The miracle!
I presume it's...
I don't know if I lost track, like, because I have a lot of distractions around here. It's kind of like having a Kirby around. I don't know if they filmed something, but where there was a transformation between the green thing that came out of the pod into this humanoid-looking baby.
Yes.
Where'd they get a close-up for it as well?
It's just like, it's like weird kind of transition.
She must have had a lot of baby grows for it to change into very rapidly in that box of hers, because it have a lot of clothes and a lot of growth and stuff. I didn't really have a problem with the baby looking more and more like her as it got older.
I didn't either.
Well, and as for Ray being so drawn to her, I mean, it wouldn't necessarily be that he fell in love. It could be because she's a queen that
pheromones
she probably is giving off is drawing.
I think everybody's missed something, though.
Go on then, Robert.
Is how the hell did she push that egg out?
She didn't. The guy was carrying it.
She wasn't carrying the egg.
No, I mean, where does that egg come from with her baby? How does it come?
Right. Robert, it's a science fiction fantasy TV show. You don't know what her anatomy looks like.
She's not the mother.
Yeah, right. She's not the mother.
Yeah, she's
What about the mother pushing it out? Just think about things.
Right, I'll reiterate. Science fiction, fantasy TV show. You don't know where
the egg comes out. You need to find something else to do with your time, Robert.
On the ship, they tell her, don't forget to take that with you. And so she acts like, this is something different. So, it's not hers.
So anyway, Billy takes Delta and the baby away in the... there was one scene in this motorbike where... the little girl was on the back. This is later on. And Delta was in the sidecar. I would have thought it would be safer to put the child in the sidecar. But anyway.
That's what I thought.
Anyway, so the doctor wakes up and Ray wakes up, and then they wake everybody up in the camp. And Delta and the baby and Billy have a little picnic by a lake. And then the doctor has to explain what's actually going on to the chap who runs the camp, and then he shows him the interior of the TARDIS to show that he's telling the truth. And so he basically goes into sort of war mode, because he's a war veteran, isn't he? So he goes into sort of war mode, prepares everybody for battle, and sends off the staff away in a coach, and then Gavrok yes?
All those scenes of the campers running down the stairs and everything would have been a little more believable, or maybe not believable, if they had painted over the rust on the stairwell.
But those places had rust.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
It's authentic.
Rust
and mold.
They were rusty.
Yeah. So the Doctor and Ray sort of go on the chase, and the baby starts turning into a little girl and keeps drinking this green stuff.
Did you
already
do the bus exploding?
No.
Oh, okay.
And the Doctor meets them with Ray, and Ray's sort of a bit jealous of Delta, and then the Bannermen sort of show up and hijack the Americans. It's okay, I do love this story, but they're a bit unkind to these two American chaps and the way they're depicted in this story, to be fair. But there you go. And that's right, then the coach finally is ready to go, and Mel says goodbye to the driver, and then it's blown to smithereens, we think. I presume it is.
That's sad.
But is this how Brits see Americans?
I don't know. Maybe it's the way these Brits J&T. Wanted to depict them. Because the way Brits were depicted in American programs is usually as the baddie or somebody sinister. So maybe
that's
they're just
true, yeah, like
flipping
Star
things
Wars.
Over a bit. I don't know, yeah. But there's
why,
great...
why don't you ask Andrew?
He's not here. What are you on about? Anyway.
The next time you talk with him.
No, I'm not going to be talking with him. I've done all that. Anyway, right. So, anyways, when the bus blows up, Bonnie Langford does a great scene of disgust with Gavrok, and almost, you know, where she screams a lot, she's sort of then quite brave in the way she confronts him. And there's a funny scene where Gavrok does a celebratory sort of shot into the air, and all his bannermen, some of them have had some money to have their tongues painted red, or they've just been sucking on aniseed balls, I don't know. Anyway, they go,
no, they all did that, and it was all their idea, and it's all licorice.
Oh, it's licorice. It's all I like
stupid.
It.
It's ridiculous. It's like after that point, I can no longer take. Well, there's a lot about the Bannermen I can't take seriously. They've got an aversion to a high pitched sound, which basically nobody else seems to have a problem with, and an aversion to being covered in honey.
Science fiction fantasy TV show, and they're aliens, right?
Then. They're getting stung by the bees, though.
They're being stung by the bees. Yeah.
Look, so the aliens might be stingable by bees.
Delta shoots at one, and he runs away. He just.
Delta's got a new dress.
Feared throughout the galaxy, and she took one shot at one of the guys, and the other one ran off screaming.
I got stung by some bees. My face really swelled up, and the back of my neck did.
Okay.
I looked like I'd gone 10 rounds with Mike Tyson.
Yeah, in the later shots, when they're out of the bee problem, it's funny that they did think to put little bee sting marks all over their faces.
Good continuity. There was one bit that wasn't very good continuity. I'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, so there's lots of chasing around, basically, with they're trying to hide Delta
Sylvester's
and the baby.
Sylvester's glasses.
And they find obviously the house or the beekeeper, and they sort of stay in there for a little bit. And then the brilliant scene with Gavrok eating his raw meat, which apparently is a leg of salmon.
That was a
it's smoked
badge.
Salmon.
He came up with like that on his book.
Yeah,
he wouldn't do that. That wasn't written in the script.
No,
I thought that was disgusting.
But that whole scene is really, really good. I love it. And the Doctor tries to be the big man, and of course, they think they're going to get done in the end of the episode. Of course, they're not.
It was also his idea for the webbed hands.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they managed to get away just through sheer cheek, and the Americans are then sort of. Clamped together by their neck for some reason, but they get released.
A simple Allen key can undo it.
Yeah, Ray gets them. Ray rescues them, and
they could have just been shot, you know.
So they're basically they get sort of. I'm moving forward a little bit because obviously the little girl is growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And I love the scene where she that sort of high pitched sort of wail happens. She grows about a foot. Enjoyable scene. They get rumbled. Gavrok puts a little trap thing on top of the TARDIS, so as anybody steps within this perimeter.
But speaking of putting his thing on top of the TARDIS, there's no light.
He put his thing on top of the TARDIS, Mary, apparently.
Hold on, Mary.
I noticed for the first time that there's no light on top of the TARDIS.
Oh.
Did it disappear, or is it
the angle they're shooting from, Mary?
Wasn't just the angle, yeah.
I think there's no light on top of the TARDIS.
Nah.
And also, Andrew was saying by this point, this TARDIS was falling apart horribly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so like I say, they put
when
this,
that guy
this
climbed up,
there.
I wondered if it was going to collapse. Mm.
Then the Welsh camp leader comes out with the Doctor and Mel, where they all meet up and sort of camp in. And Delta notices that some of her medicine has been disappearing because, for some reason, Billy has been taking it.
Why
He's
does
thinking,
he think to
sod the
take
baby.
That as well?
Sorry?
Oh, why does he think to take that?
It's a science fiction fantasy TV
program.
Because he wants to, I suppose. He's just totally taken by Delta, isn't he? And he knows, obviously, that...
Why does he doesn't know what this stuff does.
No, but I mean, he's taking a chance, isn't he?
Because they condensed it down to 3 episodes, and it really should have been 4 because they skipped way too many details.
Laurie Nick says, they did some show bee stings on Gavrok's face, or it was acne. So anyway, as a battle starts happening...
It was on every one of the Bannerman's faces. Yeah.
Yes. Of course, the fact that they were watched by the Bannerman, and there's a point in which one of the soldiers goes back to Gavrok, and Gavrok gets his gun out ready to shoot him just for the sake of it, and he says, I know where they are! And another funny scene in which Gavrok is led to some sheep, because obviously there was a... I forgot to mention this. Yeah. There was a homing device attached to one of the motorbikes.
Those are goats!
What did I say? Sheep, didn't I? That was your fault, Kirby.
Sheep.
They are goats, yes. But yes, I mean,
you know what I expected when I saw those goats tied up like that?
What?
I expected a T-Rex to come along.
Then we get to the scene that I referred to earlier, in which Delta's in the sidecar and the child is on the back of the motorbike.
Did anybody notice the Doctor, Sylvester McCoy, wearing glasses? In
I mentioned a couple of scenes ago.
And a couple of scenes.
No, because I didn't bother.
Yeah,
take them off.
The long distance shots, you can see it, but yeah. Mm. But what I did forget to mention...
I think he needed them for reading, and so he'd be like reading the script, and then so he figured to take his glasses off.
Which reminds me, last week I forgot to mention at the beginning when he came out of the TARDIS, you can see the script in his right pocket
there. Right, I didn't see that. I'm sure you mentioned it last week, that would have been quite helpful.
And he never drove that motorcycle. That was a double driving, because he doesn't know how to ride a motorcycle.
Nice one, Mary.
There's a lot of outtakes of him trying to do stuff on that motorcycle.
Do stuff.
Yeah, he mentions in the commentary that you can tell like what time of the day it was during the filming of this, because there's one scene towards the end where he's got the script in his left-hand pocket.
Thank you for that. Back to the story. Well, I did forget to mention in regards to poor continuity, the bit where the Doctor and Ray arrive at the lake where they're having the picnic is really badly edited together. Just like I say, they sort of sitting down, they're standing up, then they're doing one thing, they're not doing that. Mm. Have a look at that.
Yeah, you said 10 years ago, you know?
Oh, did I? Well, I forgot to mention it now. Really badly edited.
Just
anyways,
acting himself.
Moving on. Right then, so... the Doctor realises after the funny scene where he gets the Bannerman to be covered in, it basically cons them into getting covered in honey and gets stung a lot by these bees. Billy gets told off to take him.
With the honey coming down, it looks like somebody must have, because when it originally came down, it doesn't look like it's doing much, it's not breaking, so they do tighter shots. Well, obviously somebody's chucking something. So
chucking about the helmet.
Yeah.
Yes. Who were?
Now, I'll save it for
okay. Review. So, yeah, Billy's medicine's done a good job in his hair. It's slicking his hair back nice. And then moving forward.
That's
a bit.
The honey. No.
It's a nice shiny
the final battle ensues. And the little girl starts doing a little squawking thing over the loudspeaker, which then upsets the Bannerman and makes them all fall around holding their ears. Gavrok falls around so much he falls foul of his own trap, gets atomized, and everybody smiles. They round up all the 6 Bannermen. I don't know what happened to the rest of them. And off they jaunt, all happier that they've managed to get through the episode. And of course, Billy's got his own little sort of now suit that's quite similar to this white sort of suit.
So where does that come from?
Don't know.
He grew it.
Does he just grow on them?
Him sucking on that medicine is turning him into one of Delta's people.
And then
Royal Delta.
How?
Because it's a science fiction fantasy TV show. Jeez.
Why are we asking?
Have we not established this over 468 episodes?
There's a lot of things that are not logical.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV show, and that's it. That's basically the end of the episode. Right.
You're looking
I went through that last bit quite quickly. For some reason, we got stuck on episode one for so long. Now, if you're trying to say this is bad, why did we get stuck on episode one for so long? Because it isn't bad, because it's bloody brilliant.
If you're looking for logic, you're watching the wrong show.
Right. Yeah. The Delta and the Bannerman, said this over and over again, is one of my favourite stories. It is a romp of absolute fun and joy. Really, really good. And I adore it. Yes, it's a bit camp in some ways. Yes, the villains are a bit funny. But you've got Don Henderson being superb. It is an absolutely superb story. Love it to bits. And I'm not going to... If you want to hear more of what I have to say about that, go back and watch the previous time we reviewed this. Yes, it's got things wrong with it. It's got bits. I've already outlined a couple of things that are wrong with it. But all Doctor Who has got something wrong with it. But this, I can sit back. I was very disappointed it was only three episodes. It's fantastic. Delta and the Bannerman is fantastic. What do you think of it, Kirby?
I love it. It is absolutely fantastic. Have I ever mentioned this was the first Seventh Doctor story I ever saw?
Well, you might have mentioned it earlier on, actually, fair enough. Yes.
I think it's come up before.
I think we could all say
probably.
It was so fun to be introduced to the Seventh Doctor by watching this story, and it was just a romp all the way through. I just adored it. I loved the music. Yeah, even some of
the
music
isn't too bad. That's a good point.
Even some of the weird synthesizer stuff, but the 50s stuff is great. And here's to the future goes through my head all the time.
Yeah, same here.
I just love it. I mean, there's not much more I can say. It's just wonderful.
I know some of you
people are gonna absolutely hate it.
Oh, wait and see. I'm not saying anybody said anything new. Terry Miles said they didn't show him putting the beeswax in their ears.
No, they didn't. Yeah. Suddenly they were making the guy turn around.
Right then, I'm going to go with Mrs. Melrose. What did you think of it, Debbie?
He didn't enjoy it very much, I'm afraid.
Right. What did you think of it? Carry on.
I found the music incredibly invasive.
What?
It was definitely...
Agreed.
Come on, how many times do you have to hear dun 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 dun
dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun
dun dun dun dun
dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun
I found that awful, that every time we cut to somebody on the bike, it was dun 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 dun. It was like, please stop. Please stop. This is supposed to be. I know it's supposed to be a kids show. But I just found that every time we cut scene, we changed the music, and it was just badly chopped together like that. And I just felt the whole story just felt very flat for me. And it was just like a very convenient way of getting rid of half the aliens by blowing up the bus. And it just didn't seem so well knit together as some others, other stories in Sylvester McCoy's era. It really did just feel like it should have been just like maybe one episode long, and they've just padded it and padded it and
Ooh,
padded
that
it.
That would have been very disappointing.
I didn't enjoy it. I just couldn't get into it, and I watched it twice.
It's your memories of a holiday camp, that's what it is.
I think it's probably that, to be perfectly honest. But
also, do you remember seeing it when it was first on?
Yes, and I remember not really thinking much of it, really, and suddenly how the green person had become I can remember when I was little going, but she was green. Why is she now not green? Why does she have to be?
Mm-hmm. She's a little green.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV show.
Yeah, I know, but I felt at the time then that it was like, well, surely she should have stayed green. The other people were green. Why is the queen not green? That sort of thing. And my dad being saying just exactly what we've been saying. This is a science fiction fantasy TV show. Yes,
but there's so many species. May I give an example? There are so, like, peacocks. The peahen is quite bland looking. The peacock's quite, you know, colourful. The males and females in certain species on Earth are completely different.
I suppose, but that's not what I was getting at. I was getting at the fact that basically you don't have to fit into. She could have legitimately stayed green, and we would have liked her just as much. You know, it was just felt like that.
Billy wouldn't have fancied her.
What? Who wants to fancy a kid?
No, I'm talking. Oh, I see. Sorry, I thought about. Yeah, but she's growing up to
Delta.
Look like Delta.
Thinking about Delta, because Delta's sort of
Delta's the shimmering queen. This is the shimmering princess.
Why have we got onto this? Basically, I didn't enjoy the story. I felt it was too long, too rambly. I felt that they left so much unsaid and untouched on that could have padded this out to being a little bit more interesting than it was. And I just
wanted more padding.
They could have answered a few more questions about the different aliens instead of just being this chase scene that could have been shot anywhere. It didn't have to be in 1950s Wales. And that the guy taking, you know, they sort of mentioned maybe a couple of times right at the end, the guy taking the royal jelly to become one of them. And the doctor sort of just sitting there on a bed, fanning himself, going, it could all go tits up, you know. Yeah, well, you know, and that's about it. And I was like, okay, fine. And I just, I'll shut up now. But yeah, it's for me, unfortunately, it just wasn't up there as a story.
Tell us what you really think now.
Oh, she'll probably be matched by.
Shut up,
Mary.
Kirby. 2-1. It's 2-1 for Delta and the Bannerman at the moment.
Time, so come on.
Right. Who should go for this time? Robert, what did you think?
I love it too. Yay. I really enjoy it. It's a nice little period piece. And I just like the little bits like that when the alien's going through the machine at the start and it's just waving his hands in the air like, shall I go, shall I? You know, and goes through and changes. And just little nice bits like that really made me happy. And, you know, hearing some period music as well. I know about the synthesizer that they use is very ding, 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 and the plinky kind of thing, which I don't like as well. But apart from that, you know, the music was great. And I love, you know, the costumes, I don't know, it was just a really enjoyable piece. And there was logic things which I can gloss over, like why would Billy just suddenly take this stuff, and does he know what it does? You know, there's nothing sort of explained that, you know, if he takes it, that he'll turn into one or what. You know, that's not made clear. It's just
if that's explained more in the novel, though.
Yeah, I don't think I have maybe read that. I can't remember. I have to read it again anyway. But yeah, I really enjoy it. It's just an enjoyable, nice piece, and I think three episodes just whipped by. And I mean, the bus explosion, all those people dying, I thought that was pretty nasty.
Yeah, it wasn't quite in tune with the
atmosphere of the episode. That really did bring a sour note. That did.
But
as I said, all those nice people.
And the shooting of the Tollmaster too. You know, I mean, there seemed to be a lot of senseless killing in this. Mm.
I agree with that.
But then again, you know, why doesn't he shoot Mel when he can? Or why doesn't he shoot those two Americans when he can?
Why don't the Daleks ever exterminate the Doctor?
Yeah.
Why he bothers with the Americans in the first place.
They did in Stolen Earth.
Yeah, well, that in his arm, wasn't it, or something?
Well, yeah, but they still tried to and nearly got to do it.
I'm hoping in the special at the end of the year that Jodie gets exterminated. And that they actually go for it and regenerate her.
No,
I mean,
that's not going to happen.
Excellent.
Not going to happen. No. They're already filming by the film parts of the next series, so they're not going to be doing that. Anyway, right then. Robert Vence Jr. did a high-five alien thing for Debbie.
Oh.
Oh, is Debbie not there anymore?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. And then Alice Putcher said, I nearly ran into Ken Dodd in Worthing once on my bike. But if it had been the director or writer of this story, I wouldn't have stopped. Thanks for that, Alan. You not like it.
Aww.
Sorry, have you finished, Robert?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
What was Ken Dodd doing on Alan's bike?
Yeah.
Probably why I ran into him and nicked his bike.
was Ken Dodd stealing your bike?
Mr. Ian Bissett. Oh, sorry, yes. Everybody, just knocked my microphone. Everybody's got a... painful ears now. Sorry about that.
It's all right. I don't really like it. I've got to agree with Debbie a lot because the music going through at this time, it just irritates me. And the funny thing is I've listened to the CD that's got all of this music on it billions of times. I had it on my CD, my CD player over and over and over again. I love all the music, but here it just sits here, and it's like, shut up, you know, go be quieter, you know. It's just so invasive, and then it becomes really, really pronounced when you mix in this really lovely groovy 50s music, but then you just bounce back to the synthesizer thing, and it's just like,
If yeah, just I think they should have done away with the synthesizer. I agree with that too.
It's just out of place in this, and so it's the volume and everything just make it really. And it seems that they need to have music playing all the time.
Every single. You know.
Yeah. It's like they're walking out. They're walking out of a room. Blah, 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 you know.
Sorry, can I interrupt, please?
These
Ian,
days, though, don't they?
Ian.
Yeah, but they put it underneath, yes.
Ian.
Yes.
Can I interrupt just a second? Because I've upset Lillian again.
Certainly.
Lillian said, "Nice fez. What's it say?" But I thought I'd answer that question by showing her put the fez up to the camera. It says madness because it's a madness fez. It's the fez that.
It's the one that was given to you during the concert.
No. I bought the fez. I was wearing it at the front. And Lee Kicks Thompson pointed at me and sort of mouthed the words, "Can I borrow that?" And he came over and he wore the fez for the first half of Madness's performance at the Isle of Wight Festival, signed it, and gave it back to me. Hence, on the back of it,
nice. It's
got that. Says, "Thanks, Kicks," on it, you see. So it is a cherished item. It's nothing to do with Doctor Who. It's because Madness did a song called "Night Boat to Cairo" in which they all wore fezzes.
Love that song.
Sorry, you can carry on, Ian.
I'm thinking about Ray.
You should hold a mop while you were wearing it, though.
Sorry, I haven't got one. That's Deb's property.
Carry what on. Does Ian think?
What am I think? I think Kirby should shut up for a minute.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the review. It's one of those things, and I'm going to blame the Australians again because, again, when we got this, it was edited by Australian TV, and then of course TVNZ gets the copy from Australia. They don't agree with, what's that?
How come it was edited? What did they edit?
Well, it's a commercial-free program. Do you get commercials on your regular TV in Australia, right?
Not on ABC. No, not on ABC.
Oh, it was on the ABC? Well, they must have done content editing. I don't know. But there was that's at least what I heard in the clubs and stuff. It's like, oh, this happens and that happens. And so, but regardless, edits had been made. I've only seen this now, I think, twice now without it, you know, having all the stuff edited out for commercials, et cetera.
In they used it on BBC.
New Zealand and that. And so there was a lot more emphasis on the whole insect overtones because I didn't make the connection really between the bees and the aliens. But in this, there was more conversation about that, about, you know, how the bees can sense things and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, cool. Now that makes a little more sense. So I kind of wish with this they'd gone for 4 episodes and fleshed things out and stayed, you know, because everything's so rushed. I mean,
they did rush
they crash
the last
episode. I mean, all this happens in a matter of, 2 days? Yeah. And this guy falls in love enough to genetically alter himself. I'm like, it's just everything's just too crammed in. But, I mean, that's, you know, 80s,
and
90s television.
And the girl grows up so fast as well.
You're
I mean, that's, Fair, that's done fine. Because there's at least there's a, I mean, if there's a whole insect thing, it's like, well, she's going through this growth period and she's metamorphosing. It's like that kind of makes sense, you know, and it's a way of speeding up so you don't lug the baby around. It's like, oh, now we're a full grown girl. And by the time she's, you know, old enough, she'll save the galaxy or whatever. Yeah. That I don't have a problem with. If they put in the information we need, I mean, so little information in this, and I'm sorry, I think Gavrok was probably one of the worst villains that ever had Doctor Who.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Yes. No, I mean, but I mean, you know, he's worthy of, you know, having his windpipe crushed by a, you know.
He's not the one in the black suit. Darth does that too.
No, but he's worthy of it. No, I mean, I mean,
he's,
I realize
he's the one
that
first, he's, first complains to Darth, but it's the guy who turns in.
Kirby. Yeah, I think Kirby. Most people know that, Kirby.
Kirby.
Yeah.
Kirby. cancel pedant mode, please.
Yeah. Impossible.
Where's that button?
Yet he runs on pedantic mode.
Where's my jingle?
Not getting it.
Yeah. Not yet,
Kirby. I haven't got time to play that.
Not yet.
No.
But anyway, no, it's just such an odd performance, and it's just so, the whole Bannerman thing are just, they're not menacing at all. It's just a bunch of extras running around in fields, carrying banners. Really? Did we really need to go that literal? Couldn't it just been a name? Do you really question, wonder how they got the name Bannerman? Nope, we don't question it. They're carrying banners.
They're carrying banners and they are men. Ta-da!
Great Japanese samurai. Oh,
and they've got these weird red glasses and they like sucking on cherry suckers. Yeah. You know, like lollipops for the British market. And it's just like, what the hell? I mean, back when I watched it, it was fine. But now it's just like, and especially the selfie pose, you know, when they all do the tongue thing. It's like, what the hell was that? Hey, why don't we do something that we also use for publicity? Oh, we'll all get together in one group and go, because that's what Bannermen do.
Yeah.
That and stand and eat raw meat on stairs. Because, oh, I'm sorry, this.
It was smoked.
No, but that's what he was actually eating. But, yeah,
it's
okay.
Just the whole aesthetic of, you know, here is this face-off between these two, and he's sitting there eating. It just, it unbalances the whole argument because he's not taking it seriously because he's having his lunch.
It comes to me that he's not fazed by the Doctor. And
that's how he comes across to me. The Doctor doesn't bother
him. And also, I just find the whole thing where he's just like, blah, 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 disgusting and having to watch it during the conversation. If he was eating it when they all strolled up and he put it down, but no, he does it an awful lot. And I just like, surely you could have just been eating it and then be done. But no, it just, they dragged it out and then he spits it out. And it's like, I don't know, I'm just getting old. And I'm just like, back then it was very cool. It's like, look, he just chewed that and spat it at the Doctor. Now I'm just like,
G-O-M. Grumpy old man.
But there's just, you know, and you know, Ray's a bit useless, and there's just, I don't know, they try to cram too many characters into too few actors. Like, you know, Billy's a mechanic, plus he's an electrical engineer, plus he's a biker, and Ray goes around in these lovely skirts. But she's also got the leathers, and they're like cramming all these things all into it.
The right socket wrench.
Yeah.
It's just like, and, you know, I think 3 episodes was not enough to do what they looked like they were trying to do. I mean, there's some
it
really
was
neat
what
stuff.
They had.
I would have happily had another episode.
I love the bus driver.
Story.
The bus driver was fantastic. Mm.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, because he enjoyed his. It was this guy doing a regular job, but it was this kind of outer space cool job. But he enjoyed coming and doing the whole 50s thing. He knocks on the door. He's reading the paper and everything. And, you know, that I liked. They kind of established his character quite well, but all the others were just. They were just plot devices. It's like, oh, what do we have? Oh, we'll have one of the guys inject stuff and he'll run off with the girl at the end. Okay, cool. And that's about all you know about him, you know? So, yeah, I don't like it.
Okay.
I'd probably rewatch it if it came out on Blu-ray just to see if they managed to do anything more with it. But, yeah.
Okay.
There are some extra scenes.
Be quiet, Kirby. Right then.
I don't care, Kirby. I've seen them, Kirby, and I'm not... Well, actually, that's the problem. Especially the TARDIS scene. I love that TARDIS scene. And I think it's... They need to put that back in the full thing on the Blu-ray. Because... We've had so little flavor of Sylvester McCoy just being with the companion and relaxing. They've gone from thing to thing to thing. And it's just like, no time have you gotten to really know the Doctor. And this little patter between them and him talking about the universe and all that, I love it. And it's just like, and they cut that out.
It's a shame, isn't it? Yeah.
And shove everything into three episodes.
You just want to know him a bit more. I mean, you get to know him a lot more with Ace, I feel. But, yeah. At the moment, they're just running.
Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Cut out, by the looks of things from that first episode, cut out too much.
They did cut out too
character
much.
Character stuff.
Mm. Like I say, it should have been a four-part. Maybe they should have gone with 4-4-2 on this, or it's like the old football formation. Right then, so let's move on. Lillian Robbins says, awesome. She's talking about my Fez. Robert Venture Jr. said, well, later on, the 10th Doctor noticed, thanks to Donna, the bees are disappearing. And then Mick Jagger is asking for his style back from the Bannermen. Right then. And this is what... We've been doing a lot of talking on this particular story, so obviously a lot of opinions. But this is the bit the listeners have been fast-forwarding towards. Mary, what did you think of it?
Well, the first time I saw it, which was some time ago, I was very confused by it for all the reasons everybody was, there's too much going on, too little explained. So I just was confused and not following it well and kind of wrote the whole thing off. But now this time around, I have to say that I enjoyed this story a lot.
All right.
Well, and the thing is, it's against my own inclination to dislike the Seventh Doctor. But what I realized, the reason why I like him in these early stories is because we haven't gotten to the part that I don't like when he becomes, the great secret manipulator, which, that aspect of the Seventh Doctor I never warmed to and just don't like. But in this one, he's just running around dealing with each crisis that arises. And I enjoyed that. It's that quick thinking on your feet kind of thing that I really liked him for. He's perfectly suited for. And the story isn't just one of those typical capture and release kind of stories. Everybody's doing all different things, that it all eventually meshes at the end. So, for that, I find the writing of this very, different and more creative. And one of the reasons why so much was cut out of this story, I read, is that the scenes with the Americans were written in at the last minute. They were kind of shoehorned in because John Nathan Turner wanted... Stubby K was available, and John Nathan Turner wanted to use him. So he went to the writers, went to Andrew and the writers and said, we need scenes, that we can use him in. So a whole different scenes were written that were put in there.
So it's JNT again.
Yeah, so which then necessitated cutting other things out. So that's why, there's all that, there's that sense of back and forthness among scenes that don't seem to be related in that. It's because they weren't. They were written special for Stubby K. And something that I was struck with the very first scene of the Bannermen, when they show up on that cliff with those flags on their backs, it brought to mind something that I read later, actually through Andrew's thing, that the writer is a film buff, and one of his favorite filmmakers is Akira Kurosawa. And what the Bannermen are bringing back is a few scenes from a movie made by Kurosawa called Kagamusha, where conflicting armies, thousands on each side, each have those banners up their backs. And on one side, they're all red, and on the other side, they're all yellow. And it is breathtaking to watch that. And so this is his homage to Kurosawa, was to make these bannermen like that. So I kind of respect that in him, you know, that he wanted to do that. So overall, yes, this time I enjoyed it because Sylvester hasn't become the doctor that I learned to hate. Not yet.
Okay, well, I suppose we should really play this. I'd like to make two apologies.
Coming later.
Two apologies.
Well, that makes me sad.
What does?
That's a really great fact about that. That is completely lost in watching the episodes, if you get what I mean. Okay. If you don't have that knowledge given to you, that should have been in the episode to educate. And, you know, it would have been like, oh, the doctor would have said, oh, it reminds me of, you know, and maybe that would have been cool.
I'd like to apologize to the listeners for bashing the microphone twice in the last 10 minutes. So they've probably all got earache now anyway. But Kirby hasn't said much for the last 10 minutes.
Ian.
Watch out, Ian.
Ian. Uh-oh. One story, three episodes.
Yeah.
What? You said in this episode. No, you meant story.
Will you stop being so
He's been really horrible to you, Ian. What are you going to do about it?
I know, Ian.
and I also want to point out that I did not, other than saying yay, I did not interrupt Mary at all.
Oh, that's a first. Anyway, right. Well, you know, you wouldn't dare. Mary will get you. She only lives around the corner.
Oh, Mary, get
Lillian Robbins says, I think this Can one is please? Very fun. And then she says, the Cartmel Master Plan. Talking of Cartmel, that's a very good segue, Lillian. This is what Andrew thinks of Delta and the Bannermen. The one we're doing this week is Delta and the Bannermen. And I will let you know, heads up, that it's one of my favourite stories. So I'm always quite keen to hear about what you can say about Delta and the Bannermen.
Well, I want to just say that I've always really liked Malcolm, both as a writer and as a person. And we've sort of fallen out of touch only because he's moved away from London. He's moved to South Africa. But it looks like we might be doing an interview together for something, for a project in the next year or so. So that'll be fantastic. What I remember most strongly about working on Delta was the beautiful location shoot, because we were out in the lovely countryside, and also we were on Barry Island. Mm-hmm. And in my discussion with Malcolm, we'd concluded that we wanted to do a historical story, and the 50s was a good period because of the fashions and because of the music. And I just remember what fun it was shooting the sort of party sequences and there's a little concert with a band playing 50s music. And all that stuff was just a tremendous kind of a fun boon or bonus. Yeah. But the most deeply memorable thing for me about Delta was the performance by Don Henderson as Gavrok, because I'm getting goosebumps literally just thinking about it, because he's one of those tremendous actors who are really understated. Yeah. So he could project this menace and this sense that this guy was a really dangerous alien.
Yeah.
And it just came through underplaying and low key. And he was wonderful. And he would do things like, he'd come up with these great ideas. Like, there's a scene where the doctor comes and confronts him. It's almost a scene from a Western, because Gavrok is sort of sitting on his front porch, like a guy in a Western. And it was Don Henderson's idea that he should be eating a raw piece of meat, like the kind of a savage creature that he is. And so I remember they had something with bits of smoked salmon wrapped around it, so he could tear these bits of smoked salmon like the carnivore he was. And he was full of ideas.
I've just watched that scene, actually.
Yeah, so that's brilliant. So that's one of my strongest memories of Delta.
So there you go. That's what Andrew thought of it. Cool. Oh, everyone's gone quiet. That's very that's refreshing. Cool. Right then. Kirby?
Yes?
It's time for feedback.
Okay. Since I posted four different pictures, people have been commenting on the actual pictures, too. So I'll have to go into those first.
Okay.
There's a picture of Delta and the ugly baby. And Laurie Nix, I didn't watch this YouTube thing. It says, Nan meets an ugly baby. Apparently it's from the Catherine Tate show. And she also says, Lil Tesco's, whatever that means. Can someone explain?
What, Little Tesco's? That's a shop called Tesco, which is little, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Okay. and then the other thing is there's a publicity photo of the Doctor and what's the name of the character? Ray out this publicity shot, and Laurie Nix says, press photo, because I don't recall this outfit. Debbie Melrose, whoever that is, says she wore it at the dance, I thought. Laurie says, I remember the bow, but not the top. Maybe added a jacket. And then I found the exact scene from the dance, which shows her in this particular outfit. And I say dance. So I'm sure that was nice and useful of me. Jefferson Lee. Okay, back to the regular comments. Mm. Jefferson Lee Ng says, typo in the novelization. The Doctor pees over a shelf. I guess spies or something. I don't know.
Hold on. Isn't they get the title wrong? As it's called Delta and the Banner Man instead of Banner Men?
Maybe. I don't know.
Right. On the spine.
Alan T. Butcher comments, when you gotta go, you've gotta go. Billy Kirkbright says, I wanted to see this, but couldn't find it on a certain platform and also couldn't find it on iTunes. Thomas Cookson says, Gween. Robert Wentz Jr. says, I bet you get a free bowl of soup for that outfit, but hey, it looks good on you. And then a picture of the more teenage princess. Don't worry, Bonnie, I'll scream for you. From Robert Wentz Jr. He also has a picture of Stubby K. Says, Agent 99, this is Agent 57. I want to order a steak and a baked potato, please. And then I add two YouTube links of Stubby K. One from Guys and Dolls, Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat, and another from Lil Abner, as he's Jubilation T. He's singing the song Jubilation T. Cornpone. And also I say the line that I used for the, for my quote.
Who's getting messages?
Not me.
Not me
either. That's me. That is my motion detector on the front porch.
Oh.
I think we just got a package delivered.
So the cat's wandering past. Oh, sorry.
Here, let me turn that down. Anyway, Ian Kirk also says, I misquoted that in my feedback as I did not go back to get the proper wording. Well, he should have.
Yeah, he should have, yeah.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, Alan review Kirby. Of... Excuse me?
That was mean. Hey, I gotta look out for another Ian, man. Come on, it's
Robert Wentz Jr. says, review of Delta and the Bannermen. The Bannermen track down Delta and her baby so they can kill them at a rundown 1959 holiday camp. It's cool that we have shape-shifting aliens called the Navarino in This Is Tourist. Was not too crazy about the Bannermen, where at the end they get done in by honey, bees in an amplified scream by a shimmering child. Riding on motorcycles, picnic lunch, dancing, and a needless killing of a busload of Navarinos, plus Gavrok dying by his own force field that he had placed on the TARDIS, adds some interesting points to this story. Location shooting looked great. Every time I watch this, it reminds me of a bad version of Dirty Dancing, which was set around the same time frame. Great to see Stubby K as a CIA agent, but why is a government agent here at all? Also, Ken Dodd is the Tollmaster who gets killed right off the top. Unfortunately, one word stands out for me. Boring!
Nah.
It's a romp, but a boring romp. The two items that stand out for me are Ray being a future companion until Bonnie screws that up, and Goranwi being a future version of the Doctor, which Matt Smith mentioned in Name of the Doctor about being a beekeeper. Oh, really?
Wow.
I need to look that up. My rating, 2.5 out of 5, but McCoy is better in this one. Laurie Nix says, sometimes watching Doctor Who is like having this really interesting adventure dream while you're dreaming it and then trying to explain it to someone over breakfast and failing to recall details. But the one thing haunts you is that half the backing track of the dream was good and half amateurish. Now pass the honey. Incidentally, you gatekeepers, whenever someone corrects me regarding time and relative dimensions in space, I blame McCoy.
Yeah.
Oh, and always take your Stratocaster beyond the stratosphere. I respond to her, I'm not going to correct you on that. It's both, and Susan did name it, or not. And Lori responds, right on cue, Kirby. LOL. Robert Wentz Jr. says, LOL, Lori, are you sure it's a dream or a nightmare? I'm skipping the script. Lori Nix says, maybe it's just me, but I was getting weird Tommy flashbacks during this episode as well.
Oh, good one.
And she links to the YouTube video of Tommy's Holiday Camp.
My dad was in that. Oh, sorry. I thought that was the film Tommy with the Who. Is that what she was referring to?
Yes.
Yes, she was referring to Tommy with the Who.
Oh, yeah, my dad was in that.
Really?
Well, yeah, it was an extra. He was an extra, and he was in the audience during a theatre scene. Apparently, he went out for drinkies with Oliver Reed and got absolutely rat-ass, which, bearing in mind my dad was a chronic alcoholic, it's not really surprising. Carry on.
Robert Wentz Jr. says, hope Neil does a review. Then Neil James says, Delta and the Bannerman, I'll begin by telling you what I love about this story. Everything!
Good one,
I don't have many surprises in my locker, but the one thing that tends to baffle or annoy my fellow Doctor Who fans is my pure love for this ridiculous tale. Part one is completely mental. It opens with a war on an unknown planet, then whips over to a space station before finally settling in Wales, in England. McCoy's question mark umbrella is perfect. I really like the scene of him piloting the TARDIS as he saves the buzz in outer space. I think this may be the only time we see the Seventh Doc actually flying a ship, and he does it so well. After the manic pace of part one, the next two are basically runarounds as the cast of mostly silly characters whiz around the beautiful Welsh countryside and chat about honey and rock and roll. Like most of the story, Billy and Delta's love story is completely daft, but there are some dark moments like the murder of Ken Dodd and the destruction of a busload of innocent holiday-making aliens. I adore the character of Ray and would have loved to have seen a spinoff of her. Hawk and Weissmuller solving spooky crimes like a kind of demented X-Files. By this point, McCoy is so wonderful to watch, and out of all the Doctors before and since, it's definitely the seventh that I'd most like to be friends with. 4 stars out of 5.
Excellent.
And by the way, I just looked. I did not realize Springwell Quarry is not in Wales.
Oh, dear. Heartbreak, isn't it?
It's in Rickmansworth.
Well, no, it's funny she's mentioned that scene about when he says Wales, England. When I was a very young teenager, still at school, when I used to get home from school, when I was living in Penarth, my granddad hadn't gone home from work, so I'd have the flat to myself. And while I was being a bit of a scamp, for one day I phoned up a random number in the United States, and I explained to the person answered the phone, said, "Yes, I'm phoning from Penarth, which is near Cardiff." And the person on the other end of the phone said, "What, Cardiff, England?" Which rather sums up that particular line. Right.
And in your day, that was an expensive phone call.
Yeah, but I didn't have to pay it. It's my granddad. Anyway, so, right, I've got a couple of bits of feedback coming through. I'm going to send one to Mrs. Melrose and one to Mary. So, Debbie, you can do yours first.
Wait in. There we go. Okay. Delta and the Bunnymen, sorry, Bannermen. Stumped guest Ken Dodd was okay. Linda made me laugh when Gavrot killed him. She said they killed Kenny. Unusual to see a chalk pit instead of a sand or gravel pit. Mm. Odd that little Mel's clothes fitted Delta. Surely she's nearly a foot taller. Yeah. I recognise Brian Hibbard, ex-Flying Picket, as the mercenary bounty hunter. God, Mel can scream now. Thank God it's only for one more story. As for the great Hugh Lloyd, I'm sure he was another renegade Time Lord hiding on Earth. Fashions of the 50s and the vehicles were great. Mind you, the bike combination was the star in my books. Yet again, the baddies are stormtrooper trained as they couldn't hit a barn at 10 paces. Stay safe, everybody. Terry and Linda Miles.
Thank you, Terry and Linda Miles. We got this.
Hello, 20 Wing Map Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Okay.
I work in a distribution depot. The postcodes for two local towns, Bradford and Wakefield, are BD and WF. The two are grouped together in trolleys at our depot, so I see lots of labels that say BD, WF. They are also the first and last letters of the word Bad Wolf.
Ah.
Just a coincidence?
No, it's not.
Fans argue as to who is the best who. Boris Johnson has settled this once and for all by issuing his Rule of Six edict. To join the 20 Megabyte Facebook page, there should be some evidence on your Facebook page of your fandom. Or you must at least know who Magic is.
Aww.
Delta and the Bannerman. This is Wisemaller. I'm in Wales, England. When Mel goes to Murray, the driver's room, he is reading the cover of the Eagle comic. That always had Dan Dare, pilot of the future, on the cover. The Cameron soldiers look like green toy soldiers.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Mel travel on the bus spaceship? To be part of the experience, I suppose.
Yes.
The Tardish Wiki webpage says that the title, which is a reference to the pop group Echo and the Bunnymen, was chosen after filming was completed. So if that was true, why the banners on the backs of the Bannermen? Oh well, at least Ken Dodd gets to. Bye for now.
Perfect timing.
Wow. What was that?
Oh. Brilliance. That's really thrown me now.
Are you still living?
20 megabyte sneeze cast. Right then, Mary. Mary, you have something from a well-known orator. No, actually, you're the orator. This is an author.
From Alan T. Butcher. Yes. All right, he starts off by saying, Feckless Billy and the Ray of Sunshine, or Lost Horizons and Lost Plots in Wales. Dear 20 megabiters, Delta and the Bannermen is, of course, a closely studied demonstration of the dangers of poorly organized travel and holiday tours. Various failures such as substandard ticket control and border controls, plus the lack of technical support and insurance for rescue services, lead both to the non-delivery of the experience offered and leads on to injury and death. Despite official monitoring, it is the poor planning and carelessness which is shown to overwhelm such safeguards. The sideline depiction of a refugee seeking to flee oppression and genocide highlights the difficulties involved in such circumstances, but in a hopeful manner shows how such endeavors can be achieved, but often only with the kind help of strangers. It should be noted that whilst some suggest it's clever to call your key character a Shimmeron, so you can vary the way a baby of the species looks, so much from a hideous plastic model to a face-painted baby in a baby grow, etc. In fact, it was ridiculous. Even a fantasy science fiction TV has limits of ability. We also learned that the road where Sarah Jane Smith lived was named in honor of one of Grabok's presumably deserted on that trip to Earth in the 1950s, and did something worthy of recognition with his life. All in all, Delta and the Bannermen has very little going for it. Sylvester McCoy doesn't do brilliantly with this terrible script, but the fact that everyone else is giving a career worst performance leaves him looking pretty good in comparison. Only a great plot could have saved this story, but unfortunately it is a lukewarm mess in which a variety of cliches are rolled out under a mixture of a washed-out mock rock musical score and some Paul Temple incidentals. There is a sort of breezy ease with which everyone far too readily accepts or knows about everything that happens, which suggests either heavy cutting or terrible lazy writing in the first place. Gavrok, whilst rubbish in general, does at least get to exhibit just how vile he is through multiple unnecessary and cruel murders, rather than relying on his otherwise cartoonish portrayal to show how bad he is. How this fitted in with the production team's received instructions to reduce violence in the series, it is difficult to understand, but it is the most credible part of this. The fact that Ray was being considered as a possible companion at this time certainly goes a long way to show why they waited for Ace instead. Mm. It is an interesting thought, however, that there may be a universe where Mel decided to go traveling with that character of a bus driver and went down in flames in the shurabang. This story is 3 episodes too long. Next up, Doctor Who and the dragging on of ice and fire, or the playing of Dorothy's first card, it's an ace, or those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, Master.
Now, can I just say that Kirby was just about to make a reference to Bad Wolf, and he's absolutely itching to tell me what it is.
I know, yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Well, go on. I want to hear it. This might be interesting. Carry on.
Oh, first of all, I was going to say that Sophie also auditioned to be Ray.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I was very surprised that Alan, who usually makes weird connections between characters and stories and other science fiction fantasy
are you
franchises.
Basically saying that he should have done it in your one-upping him, ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
Because I spent quite some time this morning finding multiple pictures that I put together and I posted. So let me get this straight. In the Death Star briefing room, Admiral Tagg will antagonize the Doctor as Gavrok. Darth Vader antagonized the Doctor as the Minotaur. Moff Tarkin was Doctor Who. In the meantime, Admiral Mahdi will inform Eddie Valiant of the deaths of both Marvin Acme and R.K. Maroon as they individually help and hindered the Doctor. While over in another Star Destroyer, Admiral Ozzel is waiting for Remembrance of the Daleks, which we will discuss in a couple of weeks.
Is that it?
Yes. Also, Robert Wince Jr. posted a picture of Cool Snoopy and said, great review, glad you enjoyed it.
The world wouldn't be right without you, Kirby.
No, it wouldn't. But Kirby, I still am intrigued to hear about this Bad Wolf reference.
What are you talking about?
You said there was a reference to the Bad Wolf, the letters that Ian Kirk said in the Bad Wolf letter.
Well, no, I was just agreeing that it obviously there is really Bad Wolf.
Oh, I thought you had some substance
to this. No, I didn't have it, no.
This agreement.
Oh, by the way, on the picture I had of the crossovers between Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Star Wars, I also mentioned, yes, there are more crossovers, but I was starting with Gavrok. In the briefing room connected to Marvin Acme. And Chris Miller said, and the Joker will end up blowing up the Death Star anyway.
Okay. Right, Lillian Robbins. Lillian Robbins says, I mentioned that about Delta's dress.
Do you understand the Joker blowing up the Death Star?
No.
Mark Hamill
played
the
Joker.
Batman animated.
Right, okay, yes, okay.
Can I mention something?
I got there first.
Robert wants to say something.
And that is so important.
Ian, you've been disappointing. You didn't have as many interruptions.
I hate this story, Kirby.
Mm. Well, I'm looking forward
to... Why would I be pedantic about something I'm not that...
I'm pedantic about things I've watched over and over again.
Anyway.
Can I mention something?
Go on, Robert.
No.
Right. Besides the book saying Delta and the Banner Man on the side and Delta Ban and the Banner Man on the front, it also says under the talking about novelization, copyright, blah, blah, blah. And it says, you know, the BBC producers of Delta and the Banner Man was John Nathan Turner. Then it says the director was Michael Ferguson.
Right.
The director was Chris Clough.
Oh, yes, of course it was. Yes.
So it's got another mistake.
Oh, dear.
Well, someone should correct that.
Yeah, go on, then.
Yeah.
How did Kirby not notice that first? Why were you so quiet on this one, Kirby?
I've got some Target novelizations, but mine stop at around Seeds of Doom.
Oh, okay.
You can buy them from
whoshamon.co.uk. What was that website again?
Kirby knows.
You mean whowon.co.uk?
We have to wait. He gets there eventually.
I was looking over at my Target novelizations. I've only got about 30.
Only?
I'm just glancing through Doctor Who news. There isn't much. There's a Time Lord Victorious figurine set. Oh no, that's it. Why have they got? They've shown a picture, but not of the figurine set. I'd like to see this figurine set, even if it's something I'm not going to be particularly interested in the long term.
We have been putting those vinyls out.
They were
The splatter vinyls of the soundtracks. Like I think they're like Underwater Menace and things like that. Somebody says they went to go into the ASDA.
The vinyl records. ASDA has them. Yes.
Just like limited edition. Somebody was going out with 6 copies.
Yeah.
So, and when she went in, there was none available because it is like that. I hate these scalpers who.
Yeah, I agree. I'm totally with you there, Robert.
Yeah, you know, tickets prices online. Oh.
Yeah, I wonder. Scum. Mind you, I was shown a Doctor Who vinyl in Heroes, but I can't remember what it was now because I'm not really interested in Doctor Who vinyl. I wonder if our ASDA has it. Deb can go and buy us one, can't you, Deb?
I'll go, yeah.
Well, I'm looking over here.
Vinyl's my favorite.
I've got a vinyl of Justice of the Daleks and one of Doctor Who, the music.
I know Alistair's got a massive Doctor Who vinyl collection. He's got, we were talking about the incidental music for things like Delta and the Bannerman and stuff. He's got all that stuff. He's got CDs, vinyls from when they originally were released. So Alistair's Doctor Who memorabilia collection is probably worth an absolute fortune.
Just I'll bet.
Pardon?
I said I'll bet.
And of course, he's got a collection of original artwork as well.
Yes. I was going to say, there's rather a lot of that.
I got Peter Davison to autograph the cover of the 45 of the theme song.
Okay, thank you for that.
Adam?
Yes, my dear.
Alistair also, my dear. Alistair also
wow,
does the cover of
Delta. That was an odd moment,
Adam. As well.
So I didn't hear what you said there, Robert, sorry.
He got my deed, my goodness.
He does the cover for Delta at the Bannerman as well.
He does indeed, yes. Right, I suppose we've got a little bit of time to dabble in among the sponsors.
Dabble.
I don't think anything's much changed from what I said last week, actually. That's good English, isn't it? From what I said last week.
Nothing's changed, mate.
Yeah, okay, just press a few keys on this keyboard and see what happens. Ah,
yeah, I can do useless accents too.
There's the enlightenment. Products. Enlightenment CD audiobook. Interesting, I think.
Who's reading that?
2 hours and 20 minutes. It's longer than the actual.
Who's reading it?
It is read by Stephen Pacey.
Tarrant.
What?
Yep.
Tarrant.
From Blake 7.
Blake 7.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, we talked about this last week, didn't we?
You know, he used that author used Tarrant as a name.
I know, yeah.
There you go. It's written by Barbara Clegg, obviously the 2021 Doctor Who annual. Now, our Time Apart, which is a sort of, I was going to say something else then, but I just realised we should carry on. Time Apart, which is a fifth Doctor Big Finish story. Robots 2, which is during the events of Doctor Who's Ravenous 2, Liz Chinka leaves the Doctor and the TARDIS behind, blah, 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 blah. Smugglers, which is the audiobook again of the Smuggler story, first Doctor story, and Fury from the Deep DVD, coming soon, which is obviously things that people might want to buy for Crimbo. Flying Dutchman and Displaced, which is a seventh Doctor story. Graham O'Brien, tell you what, when we see the small icon of this Graham figurine, what you want to call it, it reminds me of the Autons from Spear from Space. It's Missy 2, a Missy story featuring Michelle Gomez, who Debbie and I have met, and she's bonkers.
She's amazing,
but she's very engaging with the fans, I have to say, very engaging.
Yes.
Very touchy feely. And the Croconus and Starlick, amongst other things. Of course, the 13th Doctor.
Did you get touch and feel,
pickup.
Did you?
Oh, I got
no,
cuddled.
She got to
I
feel with
it.
Me. right, that's whoone.co.uk. I did post...
Is that whoone.co.uk?
I did post a link from Lavazzi on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join.
Yes, you did.
They've got a really good Doctor Who blog on their website. And if you join that blog and if you join their newsletter facility, you will also get advance offers on various things Doctor Who related on the Lavazzi website. So it's lavazzi.co.uk. Who Heroes do a draw every week. If you happen to be lucky enough to get into their shop and buy a Funko Pop, they've got some amazing things in the draw. I don't know if everybody actually collects their winnings, to be fair, but they've got a couple of really good Umbrella Academy figures from the special edition ones you get from conventions. And Isabella's absolutely desperate to get her hands on the number five character with its goggles on. Say goggles, it's actually a mask, I do apologise, mask on. So go to iwheroes.co.uk and peruse their website, because if you live in the UK, you can actually get stuff shipped to you. And I'm sure that Rob at some point will let me know when they've got international shipping available, but it's an amazing shop. Lovely chaps at Heroes. And that's about it for... I was going to say something else then, I've forgotten what it was now. Darn. Oh, I forgot what I was going to say. I was going to say specifically about something or other. Oh, numbers? Yes, I remember now. How long have I got? Not long. Okay, right, so we always get to this stage of the show and we talk about stuff we've been watching. Now, I did watch a thing on Netflix called Enola Holmes with Millie Bobby Brown. What a fantastic film that is. Absolutely, thoroughly enjoyed that. It's sort of very much in the first person because she talks to the camera a lot, but it fits the story. It's wonderful. I'm not really into Sherlock Holmes and that sort of stuff, but in this instance, because it is Sherlock, but it isn't because he's just a peripheral. I mean, Millie Bobby Brown has got amazing screen presence anyway. And she's a producer. What's she, 16, 17? She produces this film. It's fantastic. So if you get a chance to watch it, it's very sort of like star-studded in its cast. Very British as well.
I think my wife watched it last night.
It's on Netflix. It's fantastic. 2 hours of fun. Me and Deb watched it last night. Isabella watched it at a different time because she can't. She just loves Millie Bobby Brown anyway. But yeah. Really, really, really good. And we've been watching.
Have you heard of Ratched?
I've heard of Ratched.
Yeah, I love that. That's
Deb
amazing.
Is watching it.
Yeah.
I heard it from the other room and heard a very inappropriate scene with a nurse and a chap. That's all I'm going to say about Ratched. But yeah, it's apparently Deb's quite engrossed in it. And of course, a new series of Star Trek Discovery is coming up in the next few weeks. I am absolutely
October 15th,
buzzing for
that, isn't it?
Because I didn't think there was going to be one, and suddenly there's a trailer for it.
Oh, didn't you know that?
And what else we've got coming up?
And also The Mandalorian at the end of October.
Yes, and another thing I'm really looking forward to on Disney Plus, of course, is the WandaVision series coming out about Wanda and Vision from the Marvel universe.
Right.
Oh, and Bake Off's back.
Yes, Bake Off's back. And it's really good again. So, and I love Matt Lucas.
That
he's
guy
so funny,
who was in a couple of Doctor Who episodes is on with it. I forget his name.
Matt Lucas.
What, Matt Lucas.
Yeah, Matt
she's
Lucas.
Just lovely.
She's being facetious. Don't worry, Mary. I recognise the facetiousness tone in your voice there.
No, I was just excited because I absolutely love Bake Off. Yeah. And it was such a joy to watch.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
This last episode, I watched it with Isla, the first episode, and it was just like being hugged and being told to
it takes you away from the COVID situation.
And all that sad if Bake Off's on and Matt Lucas is being gorgeous, you know.
Mm-hmm. And they're all in quarantine doing this too, which is interesting.
Yeah, they did it in quarantine.
But less episodes, Debbie. Less episodes, sadly.
It's a bonding thing that happens with my family. All the women in my side of the family all get together and watch Bake Off in different parts of the world. Yeah. And we all message each other and talk about it. Other than Christmas, every time of year we actually talk to each other.
I'll tell you what, Debbie, we're getting a new mixer from Aldi's, who do a Kenwood-style chef mixer, which is normally £300 to £400. Aldi's are doing one, which is £150. And we're getting one, and it's going to open up an avenue for baking in our house, even though we do baking anyway, but it's going to help.
Got a Kenwood. I've had my Kenwood for 22 years.
It's not a competition. I just said it's a good value.
It's
I think my parents still have theirs, and it still works.
TARDIS vinyl to go on it.
Alan C. Butcher says, watched Enola last night too. Excellent. Yes, it was. So I could be an award winner, that. But
I've been continuing watching Star Trek Original Series with Fred.
Yes.
We just watched the first story that had Klingons in it and finished up Devil in the Dark.
Ah.
And so I've got Sitting on the Edge of Forever queued up for tonight.
Yeah, I nearly watched the first episode of all, other than the one where Kirk isn't in it. What's the first one? The Mind? Is it Mind? It's about the woman who sucks salt out of people.
Yeah, I know.
The Man Trap.
Man Trap. That's the one I was just about to start watching, but didn't, because I couldn't decide what I was going to watch. So I ended up watching. I tell you the other thing I've been binge watching. It's not geek related, but I do love it. It's called Homicide Hunter, about Lieutenant. What's his name again? Joe Kender. And they had Series 7 on one of the Sky channels, and I absolutely love that series. He's very interesting. It's very interesting stories. Love.
We also went ahead and watched Dragonfire already.
Oh, yes. Well, I've got to watch that.
What?
Is there a nice chicken in the room?
Yeah, she wants to keep moving. She likes the Seventh Doctor.
Oh.
Right, okay. So, as Laurie Nick says, everyone talking about cookery. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Oh, okay. Right then, so next week we have got Dragonfire, we nearly forgot, in which there's a genuine cliffhanger, and so we're in that
genuine. Less said about that, the better.
Yeah.
And, that's...
It makes sense on paper.
And the introduction to friend of the show, Sufi Aldred, and...
Yay!
Hopefully she'll come at some point and talk about her book and hopefully a time on Doctor Who, but she's not responding to messages at this time. Maybe a bit annoyed that we didn't get her on at the time and I got a free book out of her. Well, actually, out of her publishers, to be fair, but there you go. We'll work on that.
Oh, and don't forget a free book for the rest of us? Doctor's
Pass. Sorry? No, it all came at me all at once. I couldn't digest any of it.
You first, Kirby. Go, Kirby. Go.
Can you get a free book for the rest of us?
Please. Right, no.
I bought my own.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gave things back, got my own.
Okay, yeah. Right, we'd managed to just about do it in a sufficient amount of time. So until next time, like I say, Dragonfire. Thank you. I suppose I better say the email address before Robert gets cross with me. It's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. And we haven't mentioned this for a very long time because Ian Kirk is the only person that supplies us with audio feedback these days. Audio feedback works really, really well on an audio presentation. And because Alan T. Butcher is always delivering a load of text to Debbie and Mary, I'd love to hear Alan deliver his own text and see if he can go
I got
a bit from the tone of your saying Dragonfire that you're not as enthusiastic about it.
I can't remember. I'll have to watch it and see how I get on with it. Obviously, I don't like it as much as I like Delta and the Bannerman, but I'm not going to say. We'll see it.
It has magenta in it.
I'll talk about it next week.
Let's do the charm.
So until then, thank you for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Please provide us with some feedback. We love it. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.